This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Wednesday, November 20th. Did President Trump twist U.S. foreign policy to serve his personal campaign interests at odds with U.S. national security interests? That's the question the Trump-Ukraine impeachment hearings are trying to answer. And this was the morning that was so anticipated because the witness was President Trump's ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, who was in direct contact with the president multiple times this summer while military aid for Ukraine and a White House meeting with Ukraine's President Zelensky were being held up. The central question has been, was there a quid pro quo of Trump demanding campaign favors through his private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani? Ambassador Sondland said yes.
As I testified previously, Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit for President Zelensky. Mr. Giuliani demanded that Ukraine make a public statement announcing the investigations of the 2016 election DNC server and Burisma. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the President.
Well, that is pretty explosive coming from Gordon Sondland, who is not a career diplomat like others who have been testifying. He had no government experience until he was a million-dollar Trump inauguration donor, and Trump made him ambassador to the EU, so he's presumed a Trump ally. What did the president really care about in all this? Ambassador Sondland clarified that in this exchange with House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff about why Trump was withholding an official U.S. government act.
And in order to perform that official act, Donald Trump wanted these two investigations that would help his reelection campaign, correct?
I can't characterize why he wanted them. All I can tell you is this is what we heard from Mr. Giuliani.
But he had to get those two investigations if that official act was going to take place, correct?
He had to announce the investigations. He didn't actually have to do them, as I understood it.
So the president didn't need real investigations. He just needed them announced. The implication that the Democrats are trying to prove with statements like that is that the announcement would give Trump ammunition against candidate Joe Biden, and that's all he wanted. He didn't care about Ukrainian corruption or U.S. national security. Here's another key exchange that both sides will probably try to use to their advantage. Sondland admits that the president never said this to him directly, but that simple logic, like 2 + 2 = 4, seems to prove it.
President Trump never told me directly that the aid was conditioned on the meetings. The only thing we got directly from Giuliani was that the Burisma in 2016 elections were conditioned on the White House meeting. The aid was my own personal, guess based, again, on your analogy, 2 + 2 = 4.
So you didn't talk to President Trump when Ambassador Taylor says that that's what you told him? Is that your testimony here?
My testimony is I never heard from President Trump that aid was conditioned on an announcement of elections.
He meant investigations, not elections, but you get the idea. Gordon Sondland with Democratic staff attorney Daniel Goldman. We'll play more excerpts as we go and explain why President Trump, Secretary of State Pompeo, and former National Security Advisor John Bolton, maybe even Vice President Pence, all now have some more serious explaining to do than they did just last night. With us now, Quinta Jurecic, Managing Editor of Lawfare, which covers the intersection of U.S. national security and the law. Lawfare has been closely following the Trump, Ukraine, and impeachment developments. Hi, Quinta. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with that last excerpt. How much did Sondland prove his assertion that the president was demanding an investigation for military aid to be released as what he called a quid pro quo?
Sondland is a really damaging witness for the president because he is sort of at the dead center of what was going on here. Every witness who has testified before him has kind of pointed the finger at him and said, the ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, was at the center of all these machinations trying to get the Ukrainians to publicly announce investigations into Joe Biden, into Burisma, and into supposed election interference in order to get a meeting with President Trump and to receive military aid from the United States. Republicans have tried to drill in a little on the fact that Sondland says, you know, Trump never directly told me that this was all conditioned on the announcement of the investigations, or specifically that the release of military aid was. But it's really hard not to draw that conclusion. I think the 2+2=4 formulation is a good one, because anyone who's paying even remote attention to what Sondland is describing can put together the fact that the president and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, were clearly trying to put pressure on the Ukrainians in order to achieve those investigations.
Politically, though, is that, which we just heard, maybe the key excerpt from today for both sides? Because Sondland, a Trump loyalist, speaking with the president, not hearing hearsay, and speaking with the Ukrainians too, concludes from everything that he was getting from all sides that aid was being conditioned on announcing Burisma equals Biden and 2016 investigations. That's good for arguing for impeachment. But if you've looked at the president's Twitter feed this afternoon, it's full of quotes from Gordon Sondland, like part of what we just heard, saying the president never told me directly that there was a quid pro quo, and that, you know, referring to the fact that Sondland only deduced that that link was in effect.
Right. That's clearly the defense that the president and his allies are going with here. And I actually think it's very telling that they're trying to make that call. You would have to be intentionally obtuse to argue that that was not what was going on here. It's not, you know, a difficult to put together puzzle with some sort of arcane reasoning that's hard to follow. It's really, it's all laid out there in the text messages that former special envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker released, in emails that Ambassador Sondland released along with his opening statement this morning, where everyone is talking about, you know, we just need the Ukrainians to announce these investigations and then we'll break what Sondland referred to as the logjam, meaning both the lack of a meeting with President Trump and the military aid. So I suppose, well, the president could zero in and say, I didn't explicitly tell him. It's hard to swallow on the level of Steve Castor, the counsel who's doing questioning for the Republicans on the committee, was suggesting that Trump wasn't really directing Sondland to go talk to Giuliani when he said, talk to Rudy, because he could have said, go talk to Rudy, and somehow that would be clearer. That's sort of the level that we're parsing at here.
Interesting that you brought up that exchange, Quinta. Here it is.
You testified that Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the president, correct?
That's our understanding, yes.
But how did you know that? Who told you?
Well, when the president says, talk to my personal attorney, and then Mr. Giuliani, as his personal attorney, make certain requests or demands, we assume it's coming from the president. I'm not testifying that I heard the president tell Mr. Giuliani to tell us, so if that's your question.
Right, but at your deposition, you said the question was at the May 23rd meeting when the president said, go talk to Rudy. You responded, he didn't even say go talk. He said, talk to Rudy.
Boy, oh boy, talk about splitting hairs. The president didn't say, go talk to Rudy. He said, talk to Rudy, as if that's different. Because if he's saying simply, talk to Rudy, like, I know because Rudy says it, as opposed to an instruction, you go and talk to Rudy, like somehow that's a meaningful defense.
It reminded me of Bill Clinton's defense. You know, it depends on what the meaning of is. That's sort of the level that we're at here.
And it's consistent on Trump's part with someone who's accustomed to skirting on the edge of the law, right? Don't ever state the crime you're committing. Just use code that your workers will understand. So in that September phone call with Sondland, he said, I'm not asking for a quid pro quo, just for Zelensky to do the right thing, do what he campaigned on. Of course, campaigned on indicates do corruption investigations, by which it's pretty clear that Trump means investigate the Bidens. So he's both denying corrupt intent, but implying the very thing that would make him corrupt?
Exactly. And it really recalls what the president's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, described in his testimony to Congress, where he said that the president wouldn't give him instructions of things that would be wrong directly. He would kind of imply it. So Cohen's example was Trump didn't tell him, he said, outright to lie to Congress about certain things. He would just sort of state, you know, well, we all know that X, and then Cohen would take that as an instruction to tell the committee X instead of Y. That being said, I think it is worth clarifying. What's astonishing about this scandal is actually how clear the president's intent has been. You're certainly right that he at no point has described him outright saying, I'm conditioning this aid in a meeting to the Ukrainians on these investigations. But from the very beginning, from when the White House released the call memo of his call with Zelensky, it's very clear that he's pushing for these investigations in exchange for getting something out of the Ukrainians. And just witness after witness after witness has testified that they understood that this was the president's intent. So at the same time as there may be just sort of a hair of linguistic doubt that Republicans can point to and try to parse, if you zoom out, there is just no doubt about what was happening here.
To that point, Quinta, it's actually astonishing to me that Trump keeps encouraging people to read the transcript, as he puts it, of course, referring to the transcript notes or summary of that call that the White House released between Zelensky and Trump on July 25th. Because if you read the transcript, Zelensky asks for Javelin missiles, and Trump says, do me a favor, though, and then brings up investigations of the 2016 election and of the Bidens. And yet it's there again this afternoon on Trump's Twitter feed. Read the transcript. Is he trying to gaslight the American people into thinking they're crazy, not reading what they're really reading? Why does he want people to read the transcript?
Well, I think there are only two possible conclusions here. One is that the White House doesn't actually expect anyone to read the transcript. It's just sort of an incantation that they're saying to indicate the transcript is exonerating without actually looking at it. And the other is maybe the White House really does feel the transcript as exonerating. I confess I have no idea why they would think that. I've been confused about this since they released it in the first place. You know, the White House made this document public in a way that kind of suggested they thought it would help their case. And I continue to be baffled why they think that, because as you say, the switch in Trump's tone when Zelensky starts talking about military help, you know, I'd like you to do us a favor, though. It's incredibly obvious.
Here's another clip from Sondland's opening statement. And this is newsworthy, I think, for being a direct challenge to Secretary of State Pompeo as perhaps helping Trump to cover up the full truth of this story. Sondland said he's been frustrated in preparing for his testimony in his attempt to get documents that would help him tell his whole story. Listen.
My lawyers and I have made multiple requests to the State Department and the White House for these materials. Yet these materials were not provided to me, and they have also refused to share these materials with this committee. These documents are not classified, and in fairness, should have been made available. In the absence of these materials, my memory, admittedly, has not been perfect. And I have no doubt that a more fair, open, and orderly process of allowing me to read the State Department records and other materials would have made this process far more transparent.
So what do you make of Sondland choosing to put that in his opening statement? And what kind of pressure to do something now, does that put on the Secretary of State?
That struck me as a way that Sondland is trying to kind of walk back his testimony in his closed deposition. So in that deposition, he really made a bunch of statements that were then contradicted by later depositions, sort of saying, you know, there was no quid pro quo, I don't know what anyone is talking about, that kind of thing. Later witnesses came in and said, you know, not only was there discussion of a quid pro quo, the ambassador had conversations with the president along those lines. The ambassador had conversations with the Ukrainians. And Sondland was forced to go back and amend his testimony, basically adding a note at the end saying, you know, oh, now I remember this meeting in which I communicated this to the Ukrainians. So to me, when I heard that statement at the beginning of the hearing, I read it as him saying, this is why I didn't remember things properly. The State Department withheld my notes from me. And that has the added advantage of making the State Department and the White House the bad guy, which sort of goes along with what he is doing in his opening statement, pointing the finger at Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and saying, I wasn't freelancing. I kept Pompeo in the loop, and he approved of what I was doing.
Well, one way that Sondland's testimony today was anticipated was that he was at risk of being charged criminally with lying to Congress in that earlier deposition you just described, knowing that Michael Cohen and Roger Stone and others have gone to prison or are about to for lying on behalf of Trump. Did you see that happen today effectively? Do you think in that answer that we were just discussing and maybe others, or that statement, I should say, that wasn't answering a question. It was part of his opening statement. But did you see Sondland revising things or adding to things to make him truthful enough under the law? And if so, was he successful at it, in your opinion?
So I don't want to pass judgment on his potential criminal liability because it's a, you know, complicated question. And the standard is quite high for what constitutes lying to Congress under the law. That said, it is definitely clear that he is providing substantially more information in this testimony than he did in his deposition. And he's sort of changed his tack. During the deposition, he was really suggesting sort of, you know, I don't know what anyone is talking about. Everything was totally above board. This is fine. There wasn't a quid pro quo. Sort of defending the president, you might say. In this testimony, he's really switched quite dramatically and seems to be defending himself and attacking the administration by saying, I didn't want to work with Rudy Giuliani. I was doing so at the direction of the president. This was the president's desire to have this pressure campaign on the Ukrainians. The vice president knew about it. The Secretary of State knew about it. The Secretary of Energy knew about it. And so not only is he being more forthcoming to the Democrats in what he's saying, but his whole sort of attitude about the testimony he's giving seems to have changed. And I imagine that may be because he was concerned about how his previous testimony looked when compared with the testimony of later witnesses.
One more detail that could be explosive or not so much is that Sondland testified he told Vice President Pence on September 1st in Warsaw, Poland, the day Pence met in Warsaw with Zelensky. Sondland told him that he believed the military aid was being tied to investigations. Here's a 30-second excerpt of Sondland describing what he said to Pence that day about the withholding of military aid and Pence's reaction.
I think I spoke up at some point late in the meeting and said, it looks like everything is being held up until these statements get made, and that's my, you know, personal belief.
And Vice President Pence just nodded his head?
I don't recall any exchange or where he asked me any questions. I think it was sort of a duly noted response.
Well, he didn't say, Gordon, what are you talking about?
No, he did not.
He didn't say, what investigations?
He did not.
Sondland with the Democratic staff attorney Daniel Goldman. Are they establishing that Pence knew about or participated in the alleged bribery or extortion?
That certainly seems to be what Goldman is trying to do here. Pence is sort of a curious figure. He's really been at the periphery of this whole thing. We did hear yesterday from a witness who works in Pence's office, Jennifer Williams, along with a former National Security Council staffer, Tim Morrison, both of whom, at least in their written testimony, gave some hints about Pence's level of knowledge. Williams indicated that the call memo, the readout of the call that's now famous between Trump and Zelensky, was placed in a briefing book for Pence to read after the call took place. Williams was unwilling to sort of weigh in on whether Pence definitely would have read that or not. But in his deposition, Morrison said that the vice president was known to be an avid reader of his briefing book. So when you look at that, and then when you look at the new information Sondland provided today about his conversation with Pence, it certainly seems like if the vice president had any desire whatsoever to know what was going on, he could have known.
But I guess politically, it's a challenge for the Democrats to decide how much they want to push that. Because if this is the impeachable crime for Trump and Pence was in on it, too, well, if they impeach and remove Trump and Pence under the Constitution, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, becomes president.
That's a fair point, and that's been a topic of conversation in the political press for a while. I will say it's certainly true the Democrats are not spending, you know, they're not drilling in on the Pence issue, but it is notable that it has come up. And that was sort of the whole reason, really, to bring Williams to the stand yesterday was to get her insight on that. So I think it will be interesting to see how it plays out over the next few days.
So in conclusion, Quinta, everyone was anticipating Gordon Sondland's testimony because of his centrality to the events this summer, his coming into his job as a clear ally of the president, not a career foreign service officer, and his reason to fear perjury charges if he didn't tell the truth today. How much did the plot thicken as a result? Or maybe I should ask that question a different way. How much did the plot clarify as a result, as opposed to just get more confused?
Right. This is a big deal. and I think you're right to sort of say, how much did the plot clarify? One of the interesting things about the Ukraine investigation is, unlike the Russia investigation, where we would sort of get bits and pieces of the story, and it was really difficult to put them all together and figure out what was going on. In the Ukraine story, it's been clear from the beginning. It's been clear since we received the call memo that President Trump was engaged in an effort to extort the Ukrainian government in order to receive an announcement of investigations into Joe Biden in the 2016 election. What's happened over time as we've gotten more and more testimony from witnesses is that that picture has been clarified. So one way to think of it, you know, if you're sketching something, right, you sort of sketch the broad strokes, and that's what the call memo is. And what we're getting now is the process of, you know, filling in details, adding trees, adding color and texture, right? So the picture sort of fills out, but the core of it has always been the same. And so I see Sondland's testimony as something that really confirms that the story is exactly what we've sort of always known it to be and adds important detail and texture to areas that were previously maybe a little blank.
Quinta Jurecic, managing editor of Lawfare, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.